ask if it's called Monopoly. 9. I use vacant as a noun. My city fills with red brick, row home, plywood windows, bandaging abandoned pasts. 10. The truth is our dog is going to slow us down and may be a barrier for entry at northern border crossings. Her chipped smile justifies the risk, and we ask ourselves what weight is worth drowning, trying to carry home. 11. Every bird becomes a vulture, every animal a scavenger, every tooth in our clutch of pearls shaped to tear. 12. The truth is the end isn't here yet. The truth is the end has already begun. 13. Vigilant on the concrete lip, the blackbird remains unfazed by the panic of footsteps slapping across the parking lot.
The voice of Toni Mall, and this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Rivada Foundation of the Logan Family, by Sinipet Fund, the Maryland State Arts Council, Natalie Canavour, and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Mike Turpin is our engineer, and I'm Grace Cavalieri.
This is Norman Sylvester, the Boogie Cat. Meow, meow. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM Community Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Film at 11 here on your community radio, KBOO Portland. KBOO is a volunteer-powered community platform, which means that we are funded by you, the listener.
KBOO is now in the middle of our spring membership drive, and we are trying to raise $60,000 by the end of this month. So we'd like you to go to kboo.fm/give and become a member of community radio. We really need your support to keep the type of radio that we present on the air. And so go to kboo.fm/give today, like all the cool kids are doing.
So we're back again this week with Mona Bowen, our expert on streaming movies and TV shows and all things on the small screen. I don't know how a typical working person can divide their time among so many different offerings.
There's too much out there, but not enough to interest me. I can't explain it.
I know what you mean. Something comes along and it's so exciting, you get excited again, and then you keep waiting for the next Breaking Bad or the next...
Yeah, it's hard to think of one, right? I'm just like, I just want to feel captivated and engrossed and entertained. That seems to be few and far between. There's so much out there, but I'm having a hard time being gripped by something. I'm going to talk about something that has gripped me.
That makes a great segue to discussing Dead Boy Detectives, which is on Netflix.
We are the Dead Boy Detective Agency. He's the brains. I'm the ball. And we solve mysteries.
Dead Boy Detectives?
It's Aces, right?
It's just a stupid name.
Created by a guy named Steve Yockey, of whom I know nothing. And it stars George Restrew, Jaden Rary, and Cassius Nelson.
Not super familiar faces, except for a couple of niche actors that I'm familiar with that you would write. I mean, Lucas Gage is in it. He's well-known. Michael Beach. I mean, familiar faces, but the main characters are pretty much played by people who are, they haven't been in huge things, really. But most importantly, one of the writers is Neil Gaiman.
Oh, there you go.
So based on characters, part of the Neil Gaiman verse. So, of course, it is weird and wonderful and not hard to describe, but it is bonkers, which I love. It's about these two young men, both died as teenagers, one in the 80s and one in the early 20s, more mid to early 20th century. who have managed to evade death, and they have gone on to become detectives solving issues for ghosts. And then they come across a young one. They get they start out in London, I think, and they end up in somewhere in Washington State. But it's such a weird place for them to end up, right? So, I mean, of course, it's filmed in Vancouver, but or one of those places. But it's such a starting with where they've decided to set the show. Anyway, they meet this young woman who is alive, but she can see them. Because she's had a near-death experience. And they're just a bizarre cast of characters. And there is a mystery of the week that they solve, a little bit like Scooby-Doo in that, in fact, the show Scooby-Doo does show up in the show.
They save dead people.
They do. They save dead people. They save living people. They save all kinds of... I mean, it's just, it's really... funny. It's very weird. It's a little bit sideways. I don't know how to explain it. It's not straightforward. It is. I mean, there's an overall mythos, of course, that the characters have to adhere to. Mm-hmm. It's a bit of a mystery of the week, but also this overarching mysteries that they're trying to solve. And I really, really like it. It is more than halfway through it. Every episode has dropped on Netflix this past week. And I have a show that I'm really engrossed in. I'm really enjoying it.
Oh, that's good. Well, can you give us an example of just one of the plots or mysteries that they solve?
Sure. Well, it's a little more grisly, but it is, they hear of a haunted house where it turns out there is a family annihilator, and they end up being, I don't want to solve the mystery, but the family keeps recreating what happened when this abusive father killed everybody in the family, and they are in this loop, and they are trying to figure out how are they not able to break the loop so these dead souls that have been dead for 20, 30 years or whatever are able to move on. And they finally end up doing it, of course, because they have to have these solves, but it's a really good mystery. It's also really sad, and they're not shying away from real situations. It's very Neil Gaiman. How do I explain it? There's fear, there's mystery, there's suspense, there's humor, there's very intelligent, the dialogue is fantastic. It's a very strong show, and I really recommend it. Yeah.
That's fantastic. And that premise of that one episode sounds really good. Well, you've also been watching Mary and George, and is that on the Stars channel?
It is. Mary and George is on Stars. Wouldn't surprise me if it showed up on another streaming service at some point.
Oh, but I see.
I do not own my home. My children are unwed. We have nothing.
If this became known, your position in society would become untenable.
My son. Change does not come unless you grab it by the hand. King James.
So, Hulk struck it like a curse.
Give the king whatever he wants.
May I perform for you?
Don't mess up! I want you here!
He will be yours. Mine. Ours.
But in my room, I want you here!
I have the power, I have the king, I have England.
What could possibly stop us now?
Do be careful.
Now I want her!
You're a whole dark brood, a lot of it.
My family is perfect.
Was that a joke?
No.
But yes, I'm watching Mary and George. Mary and George is, now we're completely, wow, we are caroming into a completely different direction here. Yeah. This is very much a period drama during the reign of King James I of England.
Oh, really?
Yes. And the actors are amazing. I mean, do I just have to say Julianne Moore plays Mary? I mean, right there, I'd be drawn to this show anyway. A young man named Nicholas Galitzine plays George, her son, and he would be a familiar face. He's been in many, many things, but I think his name is not as well known. Mm-hmm. And then an actor I really love, yeah, he's from Scotland. He's been in so many things. I mean, I think the first thing I ever saw him in might have been The 13th Warrior. We're going back a ways.
Oh, that's right.
He plays King James the First, and then there are going to be a lot of other familiar faces if you've ever watched anything British. Julianne Moore's character, Mary, she is, you know, of course, this is a time when women don't really have any power unless it's behind the scenes or they happen to be extremely, extremely wealthy or royalty. She is married to a man. She has 7 children, I believe. George is her second son. And she is a bit of a schemer. Her husband dies and leaves her destitute. So she immediately gets herself married to another very wealthy man. And it is absolutely a marriage of convenience in many ways. And she has great ambition to better their position in life. And King James is married, but he is a known, maybe he's bi, I don't know. This was a time it seemed that people were very open, at least based on this drama and other dramas I've watched, that at least kings could get away with screwing whoever they wanted to. And he surrounded himself with and had a favorite who was a young man. So they scheme and scheme and scheme to get George to be the king's favorite.
You mean his mother is pimping him out?
Very much so. Very much so. And he doesn't seem to mind that much. Again, I feel like the sexuality of a lot of these people is very fluid. It's strange. I feel like there are other eras where people were more accepting of that or just more like, oh, that's just the way it is. I don't know. I'm no expert on this. Please don't send me letters, experts. In any event, the show certainly presents it that way. I have no issue with any of this. Of course, it is sumptuous. It is stunning to watch. I wouldn't say the cinematography is gorgeous necessarily, but the writing is sharp. Of course, the acting is unbelievable. I mean, so fantastic. Costumes are amazing. There's not a zipper to be seen, which drives me. And of course, the settings are unbelievable. Castles and manor houses and just
They get a lot of them over there.
And it is, oh man, it's, you know, there's a couple of moments where I've been watching it and I'm like, wow, it's kind of Dynasty, but set in the 16th century. Like, it's fantastic. I really like it. I mean, there's a lot of soap opera-y elements, but I am absolutely here for that. I'm very much enjoying the show. Yeah.
You're in the middle of it. How far has she gone on in her scheme to...
Oh, no, they are deep in the middle of the scheme and it is bearing fruit.
Oh, okay. So that was Mary and George. And again, excited thumbs up for this program. Yes,
very much. Yep.
Now, you've taken a little bit of a diversion to the world of autobiographies. And you are listening to or have been listening to the Audible book of the memoir by Edward Zwick.
Yes, a famous producer who famously produced many, many things.
Well, let me just give a quick rundown on his career. He was originally from Chicago and also went to one of the Ivy League schools, but ended up going to the AFI Institute in order to learn how to make movies. And there he met his longtime writing and directing companion,
Marshall Hershkovitz.
And they started out on TV with such things as Family and then 30-something. And several others, but gradually transitioned into the movies. And Zwick is often the director while the other fellow is the producer, but they do collaborate on the scripts and probably collaborate on everything else. But most famously, I suppose, Glory is one of their big films.
Yeah, that was their first big film. But then also Last Samurai, Blood Diamond, Legends of the Fall.
They've worked with all of the big, big male stars.
They're kind of winding down a little bit. I mean, that's one of the things he talks about. He was born in 1952, so he's not super old. But this is a retrospective from his point of view of his career. And the audiobook is lovely. I know I missed out on a lot of pictures. Oh, shall we name the name of the book before?
Yes, that would help. It's called Hits, Flops, and Other Illusions. Yes. My 40-something years in Hollywood, and it's published by Gallery Books, and I believe the audiobook is from Audible.
Mm-hmm. I do enjoy listening to a book when the actual writer, especially if it's an autobiography,
is
reading it, because they are going to emphasize the things that they think deserve the emphasis, but also they're going to find the humor in the things that they've found funny. And I think it's different when you have someone, unless they are a very, very accomplished reader, to get the tonality that the actual writer would want, you know, their book. And so this is a retrospective of his career, and he really does dish a lot of dirt, which is great. But he's also gives credit to the people who have helped him, the people who he's enjoyed working with. He talks about actors, he talks about producers, he talks about, I mean, everything that goes into the television and movie business he discusses. And I really enjoyed it. He has so much respect and gratitude for his career and for the people who have helped him. He's not afraid to name names for people who maybe haven't, but I think that's actually great. He's not worried about pussyfooting around. He's not dragging anybody through the mud. There's none of that. Of course, there's a lot of illusion here too. He is talking about television and film. And, you know, there's a lot of baloney, you know, that goes into those processes. But it is really nice to, I do really enjoy these kinds of biographies of actors, producers, writers who have been in those kinds of industries, because I find it fascinating.
Well, I will say that there is the parts I've dipped into include the relationship he had while he was at the AFI with a woman named Claire Townsend. And talk about gossip. Sadly, she passed away, but it was an intense love affair. And it was also a little bit compromising because she was the scion of an extremely wealthy guy who was associated with both big business and the studios, named Townsend. I think his name's Robert Townsend. He wrote the book Up the Organization from the 70s, a huge bestseller. Yeah. And she had two sisters. One sister went into acting on stage and ended up married to Nicole Williamson. And her other sister was the girlfriend of Maria Schneider around the time that she was making Last Tango in Paris. And I'm thinking, this is crazy. Who are all?
That's quite nice. Yes, too.
But unfortunately, they just, the relationship fell apart. It's really sad. And then she died about 10 years or so later. But he never names her. He just calls her Claire. But if you look up, you can figure out that it's, her name is Claire Townsend, and she's the daughter of the Up the Organization guy. The book is also has a series of lists and bits of advice. And one of them is just things he's accumulated over the years from either mentors and teachers, like Nina Folk, the actress who was, but she had great insights. But also Czechoslovakian director, who you would think would be a very dour, solemn, serious guy. But one of his precepts was, you can never have enough comedy in your movie. Because comedy is what gets people hooked on the movie and want to. So Jan Paydar, I think was his name. I'm not saying his name correctly, but that director. But my only issue with the book is that, and it is insightful and there are some entertaining stories, but I've never really liked Edward Zwick very good on the big screen. His TV shows are great, but the movies always struck me as being a little Stanley Kramer-like, earnest, taking the right political position. In fact, the director that he reminds me of from a similar generation is the Paul Haggis, the former Scientologist who won a lot of Oscars in a short period of time, both for writing screenplays and then also directing a few movies. So this reminds me of one of those people who doesn't seem to have a natural feel for cinema per se, but has a natural feel for interesting stories and issues. And when you're in the mood for that, it's great. But if you think that there's more to movies than just that, then he's somebody that you can...
Well, he's got an eye for something, because Glory was the first movie for many of the huge stars that came out of it.
That's true. There's a good thing. All right. He's really good at casting.
Yep.
And he discovers people when they're just on the verge of breaking out.
Denzel Washington's first movie, I believe. Morgan Freeman. Andre Brower's first movie. Come on. What a cast. Seriously. He's got an eye for something. But, you know, in any event, he has a great perspective on the movie industry. He's been in it since he was a young man, and I really enjoyed it. I do recommend the audiobook, although I do wish it had come with...
Talking about Edward Zwick's hits, flops, and other illusions about his career, his 40 years in Hollywood. Now we're going to move over to the big screen a little bit. And remember that precept that Zwick just quoted about you can never have too much comedy in your movies? The two good movies I saw today, first one is Abigail.
Commended. You know the rules. No real names, no backstories. no cell phones.
So whose kid is she?
A very wealthy man who's about to be $50 million poorer.
I'm here to make sure you're safe.
What's your name? Mine's Abigail.
You can call me Joey.
Do you have any kids?
I have a little boy.
See you in 24 hours.
Do you know what a pinky promise is? If you behave and do as we say, like pinky promise you, it'll all be over soon.
Joey?
Yeah?
I'm sorry about what's gonna happen to you.
And
I'm dying to see it. It is
really funny. Now, okay, it's one of those, like a lot of movies these days, it mixes genres. For example, it starts out as a heist or kidnapping movie, and then it turns into a horror story. Remember that great quote from Get Shorty, where somebody asks a writer, what sort of writing makes you the most money? And the answer is ransom notes. that's kind of what they're ending up here involved in here. The gang of crooks kidnapped a ballerina who's the daughter of a powerful underworld crime ring. And then they go hide out in this mansion waiting to do the exchange and whatever. But it turns out there's a trick involved. I won't expose it, but I will say that it is a vampire movie.
Well, but the thing is,
it goes from heist to vampire.
They give the twist away in the preview, and I don't imagine that it takes away from the movie at all.
Probably not, but yeah. The cast is pretty good. The lead is Melissa Barrera, who I think was in a few of the more recent Scream movies. And then Dan Stevens of
Downton Abbey.
And then several other people. Kevin Duran, he's one of those actors, his face, you go, oh, I've seen that guy in so many things.
Exactly. I mean,
he goes back all the way back to Lost, he goes. Angus Cloud, who apparently passed away after the movie was made. And Giancarlo Esposito, who always excels. And I suppose I shouldn't reveal this, but Matthew Good has a cameo.
Oh.
In the course of the film. It's extremely gory and also extremely funny. So you got to have not a strong stomach, but you have to not care about seeing blood and guts on the screen. And it's, if you are somebody who likes that sort of thing, boy, this movie is going to be really entertaining. It's simply one of the best films of the year so far.
I've been anxiously looking forward to seeing this movie since I first heard about it. I think the premise is nuts, and I love that. I'm excited that you liked it.
Yeah, it's co-directed by Matt Bettinelli and Open Tyler, and I hope they have other movies that they're going to do. I'm going to take a detour towards the serious for a second. One of the other movies I saw this weekend was Challengers from MGM. This is the latest film from Luca Guadagnino, and I'm sure I'm massacring his name. Call Me by Your Name, Suspiria, and Bones and All are among his films. And this film stars Zendaya and two kids named Mike Feist and Josh O'Connor.
Tashi Duncan, she's gonna turn a whole family into millionaires. She'll have a fashion line, a foundation.
You were incredible today.
Thank you.
I mean, it wasn't even like tennis. It was an entirely different game.
Hey, come hang out with us later.
Want me to come tuck you in?
No, we just keep talking.
How often does this happen? Going after the same girl?
Not as often as you think.
We usually have different types.
So you're saying I should be flattered?
Aren't you everybody's type?
Come here.
Which one of us?
This is about a threesome that's told over the course of, with flashbacks, over the course of one single finals match in a lower on the barber pole part of New York State between two people who used to be really good friends and then had a terrible falling out. And Zendaya, who was herself a great pro until she injured her leg, spends her time alternating. First she's with one and then she's with the other. And she makes hints that when they're both trying to pick her up, after when they're in teenagers, she says, I'm not a homewrecker. suggesting that they're more in love with each other than they would ever be with her. There's something to be said for that, because it's a funny thing about American movies. The male love stories in Westerns and crime stories and elsewhere, you know, non-romantic movies, are always much stronger the love thing. And it's a curious American phenomenon that probably only Leslie Fiedler could explain. If you don't know who that is, he wrote this famous controversial literary crit book called Love and Death in the American Novel. Anyway, things I don't like about the movie. Didn't understand the ending. What really happened there? It was so contradictory and at the same time so unmotivated, or at least the motivation wasn't laid out. And also, I like movies that are visually creative, but this movie should have been in 3D, because half the time, point of view is from the player as a ball zips right towards their head, or it's the ball itself as it goes back and forth over the net, back and forth, back and forth. Anyway, remember that show we didn't like called Or Apples Never Fall?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's in the world of tennis, retired tennis people, though. And it also tells this somewhat complicated history through lots of this is now and that's then. And you can get kind of confused. But I didn't dislike the movie, but I ended up thinking that it just shortchanged us on certain things that I wish they had explored either more deeply or also I can't wait to talk to some tennis expert from among my acquaintances. I don't know who yet, but somebody must know a lot about tennis, and they can tell me just how well all these three people were playing their tennis, because they look like they're pros to me. But then I don't know, they may have used doubles or whatever, but boy, they really look like they know how to hit a tennis ball across the net. That was Challengers, and it's, I guess, the number one movie this week so far, but if that matters. I only half cared for it. I don't think it's a movie I'd ever go watch again. However, when I will go watch again many times, it's going to be real comfort food to me. It's The Fall Guy from Universal. Ryan Gosling, Emily Blunt, Aaron Taylor Johnson, Winston Duke, and numerous other top people and cool faces that you've seen many times. And it is supposedly based on the TV show, The Fall Guy, which was starred Lee Majors, who played a stuntman. And he's a stuntman in movies. And in his spare time, he solves crimes. And sometimes the crimes have to do with the movie that he's working on in that TV series. But here, Ryan Gosling is the stuntman, and he is literally the fall guy in a plot, but you don't realize that until halfway through the movie. You know, speaking of comfort films, last week and the week before, I was turning frequently to some Shane Black movies. The Nice Guys with Ryan Gosling, and also Kiss Kiss Bang Bang with Robert Downey Jr. and Val Kilmer, and also Michelle Monaghan. Oh boy, I enjoyed watching those movies over and over again, sometimes just twice in a row. And they're so funny, so well done. And, you know, the movie The Nice Guys also stars Margaret Qualley, and she was also in a Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And as I was watching The Nice Guys for the second and third time, I was thinking to myself, well, okay, what two movies set in Hollywood that both star Margaret Qualley, which of those two movies is the best? And I would say now, not Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, it's The Nice Guys, because it's so much better structured, so fun, so much funnier, so much better use of music and of LA settings, and it's just a fantastic movie. But seeing The Nice Guys was a good preparation for seeing Ryan Gosling in The Fall Guy, because I was reminded of just how funny he is as a performer. And remember, you can't have too much comedy in your movie. That is a movie directed by David Light. He is a former stunt coordinator and stuntman who's risen steadily in the world of film directing, first with the John Wick movies and with Deadpool 2, and he even did one of the Fast and Furious movies, the one without all the other guys, the Hobbs and Shaw one. He is proving to be a kind of a Shane Black-style director. Very good. In fact, you know, if you were to tell me that Shane Black did some ghost work on this, I'd believe you. But you're not going to tell me that, because you don't know. Yeah. No one knows. No.
So he also did Bullet Train.
Yes, I love that movie.
Blonde. Yeah, he's been doing some fun stuff. Well, it doesn't surprise me because he co-directed with Chad Stahelski of John Wick.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, those guys know action for sure.
They sure do. Well, thanks again, Mona.
Okay, my pleasure.
Well, there you have it. And thanks for listening to Community Radio KBOO Portland. Film at 11 will be back next Friday. So until then, of course, keep watching the screens.
Hi, this is Mark Sanford Gross, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to KBOO, KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland.
KBOO Community Radio couldn't do it without you. Support KBOO by becoming a member during our spring